What's good, Atlanta? This is the Blog Dirty Podcast, where Dirty Bird is the word. If you haven't heard, I'm your host, John Bueller, lead writer for FanSided. Got a fantastic show for you guys here today. Obviously, it's the bye week here with your beloved Atlanta Falcons, 2-2 on the season, riding high after a big win at home over the Washington Commanders. So glad we beat Dan Quinn. So glad we beat Marcus Mariota. And this is the Block of Dirty Podcast. Before we go any further, make sure you hit that like button, smash that subscribe button, tell everybody that this show is amazing and that we're building something special here with the Blog and Dirty Podcast here over at FanSided. So without further ado, let's get into it. Let's get into some vibe check here. How are we feeling about the Falcons heading into their bye right now? Great. It's amazing how much a week can change everything within the context of the NFL. You know, you go through the first four games of the season. You lose because Younghoe Koo can't make a field goal in what was his final game for the Falcons versus the rival Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You're like, okay, Tampa might be better than us, but at least we gave them all that we had in a game that, like, we're still trying to figure it out. Maybe we'll get them at Tampa later on. The Vikings game, just an absolute evisceration of their porous offensive line, making J.J. McCarthy look like he still plays back in high school. Feels so vindicated that he was crap and he's not good, hasn't played since. Good luck with Carson Wentz over there, Vikings fans. After riding high with that, I'm like, okay, hold on, guys. Let's not overlook the game in Charlotte because the Carolina Panthers are desperate. And lo and behold, we did that. We got our ass kicked. Lost 30-0. Parker Romo missing two field goals was very ominous. Penix had the worst game of his career. Zach Robinson didn't do a damn thing calling plays. Raheem Morris just chewed gum and dapped up Dave Canellas. And lost one of the worst teams in the league, getting shut out. Carolina had to win that game. We red-coded it, and we got what we deserved. And I, like I told you guys last week, and I was kind of pretty depressed about that showing versus the Panthers, I've said that everybody responds to failure the exact same way. They hunker down. They pull themselves up by their bootstraps. They put in the extra work. They make sure that they don't get embarrassed again because nobody likes getting embarrassed, whether that's individually, collectively, or as a part of a team in any capacity. So the Falcons did exactly what they needed to do. And they largely handled the Commanders. Look, I'll say this. This team was banged up. If Jaden Daniels played, if Terry McLaurin played, it might have been a different game. But football is a game of injuries. You got to play with the guys you got. I was not kidding when I said if we lost at home to Dan Quinn and Marcus Mariota, we should have Arthur Blank sell the team to me or you or anybody else. Because that's just so embarrassing. Like, if we lost to them at that point, there's no reason to root for this team anymore. That's not entirely true. We're too far gone. We're too deep into this. This is what we're going to do here. But what I'll say is this. You needed to enter the bye with positive momentum because you didn't do that last year. I believe last season you got your skull dragged versus Denver, if I'm not mistaken, in a really, really bad game. And that carried into the middle third of the season being really bad for the Falcons. Kirk Cousins did not look the part. We had a late bye last year. He turned into a pumpkin after Halloween, which, you know, afforded us to pivot to Michael Penix Jr. For the final three games of the season. But you saw a team that responded. You saw a team that heard everything that everybody was saying bad, nasty about him. You and I and everybody connected to this team in some way, shape, or form. And they came out there and they looked like, hey, you know what? We haven't looked the best that we needed to during the first four games of the season, but we're not dead to rights here. We're going to challenge Tampa for the division. Doesn't look like Carolina is going to be a factor. New Orleans is definitely not going to be a factor. And even though the NFC West is a little bit better than I anticipated, which I'll touch on at the latter part of the show, Falcons are very much in this. I think their playoff predictor, I think the Falcons are situated, would be like the first team out in the NFC. I think they've got something like a 45% chance of making it in. And at that point, in this stage of the game, I'll take it. You got to start winning division games. You got to take those games a little bit more seriously. But again, getting two conference wins over two teams that Kirk Cousins played for, that's great, you know, in Minnesota and Washington. I guess like the last thing that I will say before I kind of dive into some key pieces here key pieces of the offense is defense looks good. I was wrong. The Jeff Ulbrich hiring seems to be working out quite well. Xavier Watts is a revelation. Like I said, he would be in the defensive backfield. We've seen Billy Bowman Jr. do things. We've seen Jalen Walker and James Pierce Jr. affect the pass rusher. They need to get more sacks, but again, I like what I've seen out of the four rookies thus far. And if the defense continues to improve and the offense continues to find its rhythm and stuff, this is going to be a very hard team to beat. And again, I think being able to win a game where – you know, the other team's trying to claw back into it, that shows some toughness as well. Really thought they did a fantastic job running the football. Great team win. Rest up this week because the Buffalo Bills are coming in there and they might be the best team in football. But you get them at home, so hopefully it works out for you. So, yeah, vibes are very high right now. The Falcons are soaring into the bye. All right, let's move on to our next topic here. Let's inject some big Penix energy into our veins. Just when I thought Michael Penix Jr. couldn't look any worse, he went out there and totally redeemed himself. Best game of his career thus far in Atlanta. Threw for well over 300 yards, most passing yards on at any point in his career. He was able to lean on the run game. He was able to make some big-time throws in the passing game, spread the ball around effectively. I think his best pass of the day was actually an incompletion. It was a dime to Darnell Moody on the sideline. He did come up with the ball, but having the confidence to run to his left and throw it near the sidelines, that shows that he's going to eventually make that throw and we're going to move the sticks and possibly win games that we should have lost or would typically lose. No longer anymore. I'll take, Penix swallowed his pride and said, you know what? I'm going to eat this. I'm going to own this. I play the absolute crap versus the Panthers. And he went out there and he carved up the Commander secondary. Keep in mind, this is the team that the Falcons lost to in the penultimate game of the season a year ago, up at FedEx Field or wherever it's called now, in primetime with Jay Daniels at quarterback. This really shows that, like, he's getting better. He's a student of the game. He's figuring it out. More importantly, I think that his mechanics were very sound in this game. Accuracy is probably going to be a hit or miss issue with him going forward. I think that's just the nature of the beast with how he plays the game. But if he can make a few more of these easier throws and put his receivers in positions to succeed, I think that'll improve. And I don't necessarily know if firing Ike Hilliard was the right call, but the Falcons look vindicated in doing that based on how the receiving game played for the most part. A really, really strong performance here with Penix. And I'll say this. I was on the Philadelphia Sports Table podcast with host Jeffrey Warren earlier this week. On Monday, we're talking about college football. Again, I mostly write and cover college football in addition to your Falcons here. And he was asking me, because he's also an Eagles fan, he was asking me something to the tune of, like, you know, who are the quarterbacks in this year's draft class to watch out for? Like, who's it going to be? And I'll tell you what, I'm really glad to have Michael Penix Jr. here in Atlanta, and I bet he's really ecstatic to have Jalen Hurts there in Philadelphia, because this year's draft class is kind of terrible. Everybody said it's going to be Arch Manning. Arch Manning is not coming out. Lenore Sellers is still my favorite guy. I think he might come back another year. Needs to get a new OC because Mike Shula is awful. Need to see a little bit more out of Sam Levitt. I think he was always going to be more of a 27 guy. The three guys that I knew were going to be coming out with Cade Klubnik at Clemson, Drew Aller at Penn State, and Garrett Nussmeier at LSU have been varying shades of terrible. Aller's not getting any better. He's just the J.J. McCarthy you have at home or with King Broccoli hair. Cade Klubnik is just crap. He's just not good. Clemson's awful, and he's just a crybaby. And then Garrett Nussmeier, he's got some complainer energy in him too. Granted, I don't think Garrett Nussmeier is healthy, but again, he's been starting for a few more years, and he's not the player that I want him to be. On the Matthew Stafford to Blake Bortles scale, which is his prototype, he's closer to the Sir Blake Bortles the dark night of garbage time than he is to Matthew Stafford. Go Dogs. Anyway, this is why the Falcons they drafted Michael Penix Jr. because they knew that they had a roster that was going to be picking too late to get a quarterback. Maybe the quarterback draft class wasn't going to be as good, but they knew this dude was legit and they'd be foolish not to get him. Because what if you went a few picks later to the Broncos or the Vikings or somebody else? Where would we be? Maybe okay. Maybe Cousins would be better. But again, I don't really know. So many people, so many outsiders sort of ask me, like, why do the Falcons do this? Why are they drafting people? Because of this. I don't think anybody in their mind can say that Penix can't play, because this dude can absolutely play. As far as that with Cousins, I mean, it's tough stuff, but he's made a lot of money in his career. His career should have been over a long time ago as a former fourth-round pick by Washington two names ago out of Michigan State. After RG3, I mean, he's in his mid-late 30s. He's made so much money. He's a Hall of very good player, fantastic guy for the for Washington and definitely with the Vikings. I bet the Vikings kind of miss him now. Told you McCarthy was not going to be good. But it was days like this where I'm glad that we have Penix because, look, there will be ups and downs to his game this year. There's 13 more left to be played. I don't know how many he's going to look that good or better, and I don't know how many he's going to look as bad as he did versus the Panthers. Just know that that's the range with what we're talking about here with Penix. He's got to refine that. More importantly, he needs to raise his floor and elevate his ceiling so that his worst football is still decent. Again, he's only a second-year pro. He's only had, what, 7 career starts to this point. He's, what, 3-4 in those starts, playing for the Falcons. That's kind of what the Falcons have been. But, you know, we might have a guy. We seriously might have a guy, and it's been just a bunch of nonsense after, you know, the Matt Ryan COVID year. It's just, I don't know what we were doing. Some teams don't have a quarterback. The Dolphins still don't have a quarterback. The Browns have never really had one. It's tough out there when you don't have a dude. And I'll say right now, we got the guy in Penix, and I could not be any more happy than that because we won that game because of him, not in spite of him. All right, let's move on to our next topic here with – and here's to you, Mr. Robinson. Zach Robinson called his best game ever. It seemed as though, like, everybody wanted to run him out of town, and maybe they will. I understand that his alma mater of Oklahoma State University, his former head coach and mentor, Mike Gundy, is now out of a job there at Stillwater. He's probably on a short list of candidates to go back to the college game. And he might be great, but I think also it might be time to kind of venture outside and find somebody else besides an Oklahoma State guy to fix the Cowboys. And I will say this. If Robinson coaches games like this the rest of the way, he's going to have better opportunities than just coaching the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Again, that might be a dream job for him. But you got to remember when Kyle Shanahan was here, I know that's like the Lord Voldemort of names on the show besides Marcus Mariota and Dan Quinn. This is the Blogger Dirty Podcast. But people did not like Kyle Shanahan during the 2015 season. They kind of felt that his offense was too heavy-handed, that it was complicated, that it didn't put Matt Ryan in the best position to succeed. Well, year two is the pop year where it usually takes off. It's usually a quarterback-dependent system, but it gets the most out of it. It's why we've seen guys like Matt Ryan flourish into it. Matt Shaw, Brian Hoyer for a year, Jimmy Garoppolo for a while, Brock Purdy now. Cousins was initially that guy too. RG3 kind of sort of, but that was kind of more of Baylor's offense there for that 1 year in Washington. Anyway, Robinson might have opportunities to be an NFL head coach if he coaches like that. Again, like how he calls plays and how Penix plays kind of go hand in hand. There may be some instances where Penix, you know, outplays what Robinson's trying to do and vice versa. I would say Penix had a better game in week one versus the Buccaneers than Robinson did. And I would say Robinson probably was in his bag a little bit more with the running game versus the Vikings than Penix. Again, Penix didn't have to do a whole hell of a lot in that game. It was kind of more about running football with Bijan Robinson, playing tremendous defense and trusting Parker in his leg. But I look at this, and this was always going to be my concern with this team. There's talent on this football team. I don't think there's anybody denying that who follows the sport. They know the skill positions on offense are good. The offensive line is really coming together. Matthew Bergeron stepped up. Ryan Neuzels, you know, he haven't really skipped a beat replacing Drew Dahlman. Elijah Wilkinson's really held his own at right tackle. It's not about the five best players. It's about the five guys who play the best coming together. Honestly, this might be the end of the line for Caleb Aguirre unless Wilkinson gets hurt or doesn't play well. But, like, you're looking at Jake Matthews and Chris Lidstrom really just anchoring this thing and being some of the very best in the business of what they do. So I think having an offensive line that you can trust and a quarterback who's very talented that's getting better with a Pro Bowl caliber guy backing him up, you can get better quickly in this thing. Of course, your skill position guys are still relatively young. You know, with Drake London still on his rookie contract. This is Bijan Robinson's on his rookie contract. Michael Penix Jr. is on his rookie contract. Tyler Ashear is on his rookie contract. This is the fifth-year option year for Kyle Pitts. Yes, Darnell Mooney and Charlie Warner came over after the rookie contracts, but they've only been in the league for 6 years. Mooney played for, what, the Bears, and Warner the 49ers. Raylan McLeod's still a relatively young player, so to speak. Hodge, I guess, if you want to throw him in there too. Casey Washington, for sure. But this team's starting to play with a lot of confidence. And again, they're learning and growing together. Again, there will be growing pains for this team. This is why I said that, like, this team's ceiling's probably 12-5. I would be ecstatic if they went 10-7, because if they go 10-7, that might mean they're making the playoffs. Again, you got to win those division games. You got to sweep the Saints. You got to beat Carolina. And honestly, you got to hope that you can pull out a win over Tampa. Seeing Tampa lose to the Eagles this past weekend was helpful. Saints lost again. Panthers got absolutely smoked. So Atlanta's kind of right back in this in the playoff picture of the NFC South. Only a game behind Tampa, effectively two, because you lost head-to-head, but that's okay. Again, I guess tie a bow on this with Zach Robinson. He's still going to run the pistol a lot. He's still going to run out of shotgun a lot. And there may be some defensive coordinators out there that can really – see it and figure it out. But the one thing that I thought about is he's gone up against four pretty good defensive minds. I would argue that, like, the ones you beat, you know, and Dan Quinn and Brian Flores, I mean, that means something. I mean, Todd Bowles is a really good defensive mind too. You almost beat that. The worst defensive mind you lost to in Ahir Evero, but that guy I think is also, like, going to be trending up there as well. For Carolina, I think just Dave Canales is a really good head coach. We'll see what happens with the Panthers roster going forward. Again, in the NFL, teams lay eggs. There's always a game every year where everybody loses. You're just like, what the hell? Why did this happen? That might be the Panthers game later, looking back on it in hindsight. But again, winning on the road in the NFL is difficult, and winning on the road against a division rival is very difficult. So let's not overlook that. To tie a bow on this with Zach Robinson, I feel like this is a team that they need to score, like, once or twice, you know, in their first three possessions. Like, maybe not necessarily the first one that's scripted, because, you know, that's his best shot, that's his best play calling. But, like, if your offense is getting kind of stagnant on possession two and three, you might be in for a long day. You might need to trust your special teams in the field goal kicking. You might need to really lean on your defense, which I think you can do now. But I think really the big thing here is getting all the offensive weapons healthy. You got to remember Mooney was not help, did not play the first week of the season, and Lona got beat up. We've been blessed that, like, you know, Robinson and Algier and Penix have been healthy up to this point. McGarry out for the year is not great, but we've managed with Wilkinson thus far. Again, it's all about how the pieces fit together. And for as much crap as I talked about Zach Robinson previously, the first 3 weeks of the season, he's won me back over just a little bit based on what he did versus the Commanders. So I'll give him some credit there.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
All right, let's move on to the second half of our show with some too legit to Pitts. Kyle Pitts is flourishing with Penix as his quarterback. That's undeniable. And I'm going to go out here and say this. I think the chances of him returning to the team in 2026 are pretty high right now because he's playing with a crashing sense of urgency. Again, he kind of has a little bit of the aloof dumbassery about him. That's just who he is. But like, if you're putting up the numbers that he's doing now and being a factor in the receiving game at tight end, like you'll deal with that. When you're out there kind of moping and pouting and not really being about it, then we can't have you on this team. But I think seeing the running game with Robinson and Algier take off, that as a tight end, I think playing with alongside Charlie Warner has got him fired up too. Warner may catch two passes the whole year, but I think being in the tight end room with that professional and that dog is going to rub off on Pitts in a very positive way. And I think knowing that like he is a mega talent, again, he was the number 4 overall pick in the 2021 NFL draft. Again, that draft was largely crap. But, I mean, Jamar Chase went number 5 to the Bengals after us. Penei Sewell went 7 or 8 to the Lions. You look at Trevor Lawrence for the Jaguars. He's just a Jag playing for the Jaguars. And then, obviously, we know about Zach Wilson with the Jets and Trey Lance with the 49ers. What a colossal waste of time that was. Justin Fields with the Bears. Same sort of thing. Mac Jones with the Patriots. Every so often you have a draft right there that stinks. Like the year that I would have come out, 2013, was terrible. Like the only good players in that draft might have been what we got Desmond Trufant that year. DeAndre Hopkins was in that draft. I'm blanking on it, but that was the Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel draft. Lane Johnson was in that draft too. Yeah, he's been a stud. But yeah, you get what I'm saying for the most part. When it comes to Pitts, I always felt like it was the same sort of issue with Arnold Ebiketie on defense, where like he's in a contract year, and with how the roster is built and structured, there's a very, very narrow margin for either of them to return to the team next year. Because if they ball out, then they'll price themselves out of what Atlanta can afford. Because again, you got to pay Drake London, you got to pay Robinson. Algier is a free agent to be. Penix is going to get his money at some point too. Then you got to figure out, okay, how do we keep Lindstrom and everything like that? Bates's contract could be coming up as well. Do you want to have Caden Ellis on this team? You get what I'm saying. Got to figure out how you're going to pay Brandon Dorlos. He's been a stud. Rook, I guess. Trying to think who else. Dorlos has been fantastic there along the defensive line. I really enjoyed watching him play. But I'll say this, like, with Pitts just having – again, it was always going to come down to his connection and his rapport with Penix. Yeah, I think he just had a better one with him than he did with Cousins. It's looking like it did when Matt Ryan was his quarterback. And maybe Pitts is just a quarterback-dependent tight end, and that's okay. This is the best of the best in the NFL. Some players may have been outstanding in college, but, like, you can't have Kyle Trask throwing the ball to you in the NFL. Come on. You got to have a guy who's top 20 at his position doing it. If you don't have that, then you're not going to get the stats, you're not going to get the accolades, and you're going to be labeled as a bust. I think at this point, Pitts is comfortable. You're comfortable enough if he's got him on your fantasy team, you can play him. Like, it's no longer going to be maddening. There may be games where he disappears, but like, Like, I've got Mark Andrews on my fantasy team with Lamar Jackson throwing the ball. I view Pitts kind of in the same sort of vein. Maybe I'm wrong there, but, like, it's good. This is a guy that, like, if he's healthy, I'm going to start. To tie a bow on this with Pitts, I think he wants to be here. I think the team's fun. I think I have interviewed Kyle Pitts before. He likes his teammates. He loves playing with Drake London. He was a big fan of Desmond Ridder, too, as a person. I just don't think it worked out on the football field. But I would say, for the most part, the connection he's got with Penix really it jumps off the page. Because, look, I thought when Cousins was playing, he had a really great rapport with Mooney. And maybe Penix is still trying to figure that out. But Mooney's a pro. Mooney's been around. Mooney came here willingly. And as far as Drake London's concerned, he's always going to get his. And he's like, that's what makes Drake London so good. And we'll touch on him here in a second. But Pitts may be quarterback dependent. But let me put this way. If the Atlanta Falcons want to see Michael Penix Jr. be all that he can be in a Dirty Birds uniform, then it probably serves you to make it a priority to bring Kyle Pitts back. And we'll leave it at that. All right, let's move on to our penultimate topic today here with hi, Christy. Thanks for chatting in today. Moving into our penultimate topic today with some London calling. Drake London's on his way to being a superstar in this league, and I don't think it's particularly close. We already know that Bijan Robinson's a superstar. I think people view him as an unquestioned top five running back in football. Maybe behind Saquon Barkley, I think that's totally fair. Derrick Henry's fumbling the ball a lot. Maybe it's Robinson too, because then you're right up there with like Jahmyr Gibbs. David Montgomery's pretty good too. I'm sure I'm missing somebody else as well. But we know that Robinson's like has arrived there. It's the same thing with Jesse Bates, the same thing with Chris Lindstrom and everything like that. We got that figured out. We got guard, we got running back, and we got safety figured out. We got wide receiver one figured out here too. And the beautiful part in this is there are draft picks that all of my teams make, you know, namely the Hawks and the Falcons, where I'm like, I can be overly excited about it. There are some picks where, like, I remember being a Hawks and like, oh, we got Sheldon Williams. He's going to be so good. Was not. too old, too Duke, didn't work out. I was not a fan of the Drake London pick back in the day. I'm like, is he really the first wide receiver you're going to take? Where's loaded wide receiver? And then eventually we weren't, because Julio Jones fell off a cliff physically and Calvin Ridley bet himself off the team. But London, once I kind of got – I was dubious about him coming in, because I was like, oh, he's going to bring some of that Clay Helton USC stink with him. Like a team that's just a bunch of entitled pansies, for lack of a better word. They still kind of are under Lincoln Riley. But Drake London, I think when he came in, I'm like, they're like, oh, he's going to be the next Mike Evans. He's a former power forward in basketball. He knows how to use his body to box people out and get the football. He can fly a little bit, but he's just fantastic at possession receiving. And I watched him. I've watched him the last several years. And hard to believe this is his fourth year at the team. He just makes those big plays. He doesn't always come up with a catch sometimes. He will occasionally put the ball in the dirt, but he's a guy that I feel that Penix can trust on third down to haul it in and move the sticks. We don't win this game without him. There's no way around that. And I think the other thing about Drake London is he's starting to develop a bit of a clutch gene. And again, there are some times where, like, you know, you can't ask a guy to come through every single time in the clutch, but he's come through enough times for us to where, like, that's going to matter later on. You know, I think back to the Eagles game last year. I think, you know, this year making the big plays versus the Commanders and such. I nearly had that touchdown. Might have had that if he had a better angle versus the Buccaneers when he got hurt early in the week. But this is a guy that, when you are talking about the Atlanta Falcons to anybody else in the league, they're like, oh, dude, Drake London's awesome. I wish he was on my team. And I think anytime you've got a player who's top 12 or better at your position, you're going to start getting those sort of remarks from other people, because – not every team, yeah, they'd like to have him, but they've got a guy who might be better. You know, I think the Vikings, like, yeah, I'd love to have Drake London, but we've got Justin Jefferson. Yeah, we're the Bengals, but we got Jamar Chase. Like, there's guys out there like that. But Drake London has clearly elevated to the level of Jesse Bates III, Chris Lindstrom, and Bijan Robinson, of where, like, yeah, we're set there. We're good. There's no snag in the back of your brain where you're like, do we have the guy? We undoubtedly do. And for as many great receivers as I've seen play here, you know, in my 36 years on earth, London does stuff a little bit differently than I think I've seen. He's kind of a combination between what Roddy White was and kind of what I remember Terrence Mathis to be, where he's got the star power and the tenacity of Roddy White, but I think there's also a selflessness that Terrence Mathis had when I watched growing up, where it's just like, you know what? He just makes the entire receiving game better. I'm not going to put him on the same category as Julio Jones just because he was a freak. I didn't really watch a whole hell of a lot of Andre Rison growing up, but apparently he was like this too, very briefly, a little bit of a head case, but an immense mega talent for sure. Certainly better than Brian Finneran, whoever else we've had, receivers of note here in Atlanta. But as I watch Drake London grow and flourish, I'm really impressed by how he's able to build on each game. This is a guy that, like, is having fun but putting in his craft. And I guess the other thing, the last thing I'll say here before I get into my final topic of the day is the Mike Evans comparison is pretty favorable. Because Mike Evans came into the league out of Texas A&M, I think the 2014 draft, because 15 was Jameis there in Tampa. I think that was the first pick that Jason Light made as their general manager. And, like, for the first several years of this team, like 14 through 19, the Bucs weren't a playoff team. They were crap. They were crap like we've been crap, like just mid-tier crap. But he still put in the work. He still got his yards. He still put up his numbers. And then the team got really good around him. And then he became a leader. Now he's no doubt a Hall of Famer. He's one of the most productive wide receivers I've ever seen. And if London's career trajectory is like that, then, you know, that would be mildly impressive. The last little bit here is there's also another guy in the division who is cut from that Mike Evans cloth, and he plays in Carolina right now, and that's Tetaro McMillan. Tet McMillan's a fantastic player. We saw that 2 weeks ago in Charlotte, and as long as – I mean, if he and Bryce Young can build a rapport, I think it'll be good. This is a guy that the Panthers view as a building block for them. Maybe that was the same sort of thing we did with Drake London when we took him in the 22 draft. So just sit there, just think about that here for a little bit. Drake London's really progressing, and you know, he's the leader of this receiving core. More importantly, I think he's just as thrilled to see his teammates have success as he does. I think he just wants to win. Perfect character guy for this team. I'm so happy to have him. And let's move on to our final topic here today. We're going to go around the perimeter. My thoughts about the rest of the NFL as the Falcons are on their bye. This is just kind of, I'm just going to go through this division by division. AFC to NFC, I think that's fair. AFC East, through the first 4 weeks, Buffalo's 4-0, Patriots are 2-2, Dolphins are 1-3, Jets are 0-4. Kind of playing out how I thought it would. I thought Buffalo was going to be the toast of that division again. I thought the Patriots were going to take advantage of the division not being very good. They're still not a great team, but they'll be in and around the playoff mix because of where they play. The Dolphins, the Jets, they're both disasters. I almost feel bad for Tyreek Hill destroying his leg, but he's a terrible person, so whatever. And then the Jets, they're just the jetty Jets. They just stink. Man, they're just not good. And I feel bad for Aaron Glenn, but this is what you sign up for him to go coach that team. This is why you don't draft Armand Bimbu. This is why you go get Jackson Dart, because now he's with the Giants. We'll touch on them in a minute. AFC West, because that's next thing there on Google. You got the Chargers at 3-1, the Chiefs at 2-2, the Broncos at 2-2, and the Raiders at 1-3. I had the Raiders in the basement. They've won the first week of the season. They've lost three in a row. Don't know what they're doing. They're trying to win now, but rebuild with a 74-year-old head coach. Do the pieces fit? I don't know. We've kind of crossed the Al Davis Rubicon with Mark Davis, or just, it's just the Davis Rubicon at this point. The Chiefs, they've won two in a row after losing their first two. They're kind of in denial about this. They're kind of like my Georgia Bulldogs, where like, you won two in a row. You thought you could have won three in a row. You didn't. You're probably not going to get to the AFC Championship game this year. I think the Chargers are playing with a lot of confidence. I'm not a big Justin Herbert fan, but I will admit he is starting to play better. Jim Harbaugh is a raging psychopath. and that's all I'll say. That's all I'll say about that. The Broncos, maybe Sean Payton's giving Bo Nix all the answers to the test. Bo Nix needs to level up. But again, this is a guy that's got a high floor, low ceiling. Maybe he's not a finished product. If he is, that's scary for Denver, because the rest of that team is pretty talented. Moving on to the AFC North, Steelers are 3-1, because of course they are. The Bengals are 2-2. The Ravens are 1-3, and the Browns are 1-3. I think Aaron Rodgers is playing better for the Steelers. We'll see what happens. I just hate the fact that Steelers fans are dealing with Stockholm Syndrome of Mike Tomlin. This may be Rodgers' last year. He may hold them out and put them through like another year of like a Brett Favrean, oh, am I playing or not, whatever it is. Bengals are kind of cooked with Joe Burrow hurt. I don't know if Jake Browning is the answer. Maybe Cousins gets traded there. I wouldn't trade him. We'll see. The Ravens at 1-3 is really, really alarming to me. And that was my pick to win the Super Bowl. And I feel very – I'm glad I get to talk about this now. I said this is the year between the Baltimore Ravens and the Buffalo Bills. This is the year for one of them to win a Super Bowl. And if they don't win it, either or both, they're not winning it with its current core. Like, if you don't win a Super Bowl this year with Lamar Jackson, John Harbaugh, you're just not going to. Just like you're not going to win a Super Bowl. If you're not going to win a Super Bowl this year with Josh Allen and Sean McDermott, it's not happening. It might be Buffalo's year. We'll see that next week, and we'll touch on that game in detail next week for sure. Certainly 2 weeks after that, once you see it happen. But I don't know. Baltimore's been really disappointing. And then Cleveland probably should have, for lack of a better word, gotten like, you know, drafted a quarterback as opposed to, I don't know, trading back and getting Mason Graham. Cause what the hell was that? Excuse me. This is what happens when you talk, you sneeze, you cough, you can't do anything. This is how it goes. Every sneeze I have is just like hurts me. I hope we beat the Bills too, Christy. As a matter of fact, at the start of the year, I picked us to beat the Bills, but I'm not so sure about that right now. I'll take us getting the points. I don't know if we'll beat the Bills. And then I'm going to look across the board at the AFC South. The Colts are 3-1. The Jaguars are 3-1. The Texans are 1-3. And the Titans are 0-4. Half right, half wrong. I was right on the Jaguars being halfway decent or potentially being halfway decent. And I was right on the Texans not being that good. Texans are 0-3. They won a game. I was so wrong on the Colts and the Titans. Colts just had their first loss of the season. Daniel Jones is playing with a lot of confidence under Shane Steichen. I think, you know, maybe it's just more of an indictment of the Giants organization as a whole. Titans are an absolute tire fire. I think they have the worst offense in the NFL. I think they've scored, 51 points. That's the worst in the AFC, and that's the worst in football. Like, the Saints have scored 15 more points than them. So that's kind of got the AFC South. Moving on to the NFC East, Eagles are 4-0, Commanders are 2-2. What, Cowboys are 1-2-1. The Packers are 2-1-1. I did not know they tied. Did that really happen? Packers and Cowboys tied. That really happened. They tied 40-40. Jesus. Oh my God. tying in the NFL is so stupid. Just figure out a winner or a loser. I understand there's like, you know, you're dealing with people and contracts and stuff. Just do college overtime. Just make it all the same. Whatever this is stupid. And then you got what the Giants at 1-3. Kind of exactly how I thought it would be. Kind of surprised to see the Eagles at 4-0 at this point. Commanders, I think they've just been bit by the injury bug. I get that. Cowboys aren't a good team. Giants aren't a good team, but they've got Jackson Dart. NFC West. Let's see what we got going on. What going on there? Yes. Thank you, blessing me, Christy. Have I heard the rumors about Zach Robinson being considered for Oklahoma State head coach? Oh yeah. I knew he was a candidate as soon as he became an OC here in Atlanta. This is a guy who played for them in 09. Dez Bryant was his wide receiver. He was the quarterback before Brandon Weeden there in Stillwater. So very early on in Mike Gundy's coaching career there at Oklahoma State as the head coach. If he wants this opportunity, he could get it. Again, you have the T. Boone Pickens trust there to pay whatever he needs. I just think that Gundy left that program in disarray. And again, you don't want to be the guy that replaces the legend. You want to be the guy that replaces the guy who replaces the legend. Maybe that day will come for him to go back to Stillwater. But right now, I think the opportunities to be had for the most part in the NFL, like this is the same sort of thing. Like Kellen Moore, we're like, oh, could he go be the head coach at Boise State? I'm like, I think he kind of wants to be a head coach of the NFL. It took a while, but now he's the head coach of the awful Saints, but he is the NFL head coach. Yeah, watched all that game. Wish they allowed a second overtime. You and me both. That's NFL overtime is stupid. I'll die on that hill. Let's see. NFC West. The 49ers 3-1. The Seahawks 3-1. The Rams 3-1. And the Cardinals are 2-2. Cardinals have lost two straight. They look kind of pitiful versus the Seahawks in Thursday Night Football. That was not a good look for them. We do play. I think we play the entire. We do play the entire division this year, so that kind of scares me because, look, I said the NFC West was going to be a bloodbath the entire time. I was of the belief that first place and last place is going to be decided by two different two games. I was higher on the Cardinals than anybody else coming in, but I think it's also with Kyler Murray, you're kind of at your ceiling with a smaller, diminutive quarterback. At some point, I wonder if they're going to level up and maybe they're kind of at the peak of what they are. I am of the belief that the Rams, like, this is the last year that they're going to be good. I think that they're going to pull back pretty soon. This is why I think that they would probably serve them to draft a quarterback with the pick that we gave them. I think Fernando Mendoza out of Indiana would be perfect for them. Or go get you Lenore Sellers. Just get one of those two guys. Maybe John Mateer. I think he could work. I think Sam Levitt, there's opportunities out there. I think the Rams are the one team to watch to draft a quarterback next year, regardless of how good the draft is. As far as the 49ers and Seahawks are, I think that's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Seahawks are playing with a lot of confidence right now. Maybe Sam Darnold wasn't the problem there in Minnesota or anywhere else. He was good in Minnesota. I think he's just got a really good OC with Clint Kubiak, a guy he knows. And the 49ers, this team just loves to get hurt. I don't see them being able to sustain. They might beat us in a couple of weeks. We might be 2-4, you know, after this stretch of games here, but like, we'll see. I still NFC West is too wild to figure out at this point. And then let's move on to the NFC North. I love how ours is last. Get the Lions at 3-1, the Packers 2-1-1, the Vikings 2-2, and the Bears 2-2. Once again, I feel vindicated that this is still the Lions division. For as much as I loved the Packers getting Micah Parsons to augment their defense, they still have a Matt LaFleur problem. More importantly, they might have a Jordan Love ceiling they got to deal with. I think Jared Goff's in his bag. I think he's the best quarterback in that division by a considerable margin. And even though the Bears have won two in a row, Caleb Williams is still a head case. They'll be okay. I think I had them winning about 7 games. If it goes well for them, they'll win 10. I think they're about a year away from really being a playoff team. I think the Vikings made a colossally massive mistake at quarterback with J.J. McCarthy. Not that it's going to cost Kevin O'Connell his job, but Brian Flores is like, you know what, I'm going to leave. And at that point, then that will cost Kevin O'Connell his job. Because if that defense isn't holding up, then I don't think the Vikings are going to hold up as a team. Now looking at our division. Yeah, let's end this thing on a high note, y'all. Looking at our division here, let me see. You have the Buccaneers at 3-1. They just lost the Eagles. We have the Falcons at 2-2 with the win over the Commanders. The Panthers are 1-3, and the Saints are 0-4. You know, if you can't take away the Panthers game, I mean, in the game you've scored 76 points in three games. And in three games, you've allowed 56. So you're a lot better of a team than what your record probably indicates. The thing is, and this is the biggest thing I got to say with the division, I think Baker Mayfield's playing at an MVP level. I think Baker Mayfield's elevated himself to a top five quarterback in football right now, particularly with Joe Burrow being hurt, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens pulling back a little bit. I don't necessarily know if he'll catch Josh Allen, but he's playing in that upper tier right now where I'm like, this is good. And I hate the fact we got to play them twice in the schedule. I did say Tampa had a very low ceiling. Again, roughly what we are. Maybe win a playoff game or two. Maybe get the NFC Championship game if you have the right matchup here and anything like that. But I guess with the Bucs, it's like it shouldn't matter that they're a slightly better team than us. We should use that as to our advantage to catch them, to surpass other teams in the league. Because, I mean, let's be real. Getting wins over the Vikings and Commanders, that's going to help us out later on in potentially making the playoffs, either as a division winner or wild card team. Getting wins in conference play is huge. Getting wins in divisional play is even better. Got to start doing that more. And then with Carolina and New Orleans, Carolina's a year away from being a year away. I said they'd kind of be like the Arizona Cardinals were last year. Maybe not. I still think Dave Canales is a really good head coach. The personnel's kind of got some issues, even though they beat the tar out of us. They'll win some games, but they'll also lose some games. This is a team that, let me put it this way, I'm much happier to have Penix than have Bryce Young as my quarterback. And then the Saints. I'll give the Saints this. They're not a good football team. They might be among the worst in the NFL. But they are playing hard for Kellen Moore, Brandon Staley, Doug Nussmeier. Again, this is always going to be a trying year for the Saints. And even though they suck and we hate them and they're pawn scum, they're terrible people and everything that comes along with that, you know, when you see a rival that's just getting its ass kicked every day, it does feel really, really good. But there's also at some point there where like you almost feel sorry for them, but you really don't. It's the same thing with me as a Georgia fan watching Florida really struggle. I'm like, I know what you're capable of, but this isn't it, and this isn't good enough. And I feel bad for Moore. Like he took this job. He took he left the Eagles to do this. And I'll say this, like the Eagles offense will take a step back because of not having Moore or Nussmeier around. They got to get a quarterback. Could you imagine if they drafted Garrett Nussmeier and he's playing for dad? Dad's calling plays. This is some high school thing. No, this is a Saints game. Christy, you're absolutely right. Our division rivals have always played the hardest against us. It'd be a really good idea for Raheem Morris to wake the hell up and realize that, because that's very, very, very important. Yeah, you gotta take care of business and division. There's no excuses for that. That can't be the reason you miss the playoffs here. Yeah, that's kind of what I got about here. I'll say this: the most pleasant surprise in the NFL thus far for me is the Indianapolis Colts. The biggest disappointment got to be the Baltimore Ravens, the team that I was probably the most right about that was going to be good. Probably Detroit, the team that I was the most right about that they were going to be terrible. That was going to be the Saints. Team that I was the most wrong about being good, that's actually terrible, is the the Titans. I thought they were going to be good. I don't know why. I wanted to believe in it. I wanted to believe in it. It's not going to work out. And a team that I thought that was going to be, you know, I don't even know what I'm trying to say anymore. But Falcons are right about where I thought they'd be. I thought their first six games were very challenging. It eases up a little bit once you get the Dolphins, Colts, and Jets and Patriots on your schedule. Got to win those games. Gets a little tough towards the end there when you got the Cardinals and the Rams and the Bucks. And I think you got the Saints there at the end. Yeah. I wish I knew the schedule like the back of my hand. Again, sometimes you're so locked into work and life, you forget who you're playing. Like, I knew we had a bye coming up after this, but like after the Georgia-Alabama game, like, who the hell do we play? Like, oh, we got Kentucky at home. Okay, so that's a win. So Georgia's going to beat Kentucky. The Falcons are on a bye. It's going to be a really good weekend for me. Hope it's a really great weekend there for you and everybody else out here in a Blog and Dirty Bird Nation, because this was episode 61 of the Blog and Dirty Podcast. You can follow me, John Bueller, on Twitter or the X at Bueller118. You can follow the show at Blog and Dirty on Twitter and X. You can follow it on YouTube at Blog and Dirty FS. Be sure to give it a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere there's podcasts. Read all the content on bloganddirty.com. Read all the content on fansite.com. Read all my stuff in the college division, local regional betting network, Sports Illustrated. Just consume media content because it's the right thing to do. Again, hit that like button, like Michael Penix Jr. hitting that booze, big past Drake London. Smash that subscribe button like Tyler Allgeier running down the track. Do whatever you need to do to make this show grow. Producer Sean's giving me a little bit more leeway. I have operational control in the back end here with the YouTube channel. Going to put some more stuff out there to really engage the fans. Going to be a more polished product, but again, I got to clean up all the stuff from last year that he or whomever didn't do. I know what I'm doing now. And I hope you know what you're doing now, too, because, you know, we're having the time of our lives here at Blog and Dirty Bird Nation. Once again, thanks for listening. And this is the Blog and Dirty Podcast.